Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and today it's a kind of a legal day on the program. We're going to, a little later on, we're going to take a look at the legal work done by Legal Action of Wisconsin. We're going to talk about what it's like to be in jury duty. And to begin with, we're going to talk about public defenders, because public defenders play a very essential role in our criminal court system. And if you've been arrested and you can't afford to hire a legal counsel, a public defender has to be assigned to you. And we're talking about the whole process today with Jennifer Bias. Jennifer is the state public defender leading the Office of Wisconsin State Public Defender. So as we talk with Jennifer, I hope you'll join in. What have been your experiences? Have you had some working with a public defender, or maybe you know somebody who has? I have a comment relating to it, or a question about specific reasons why you may need one. Number to call, 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. And Jennifer Bias, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it very much.
Good morning, Mr. Mueller. Thank you so much for having me.
You're the state public defender, and that means kind of you're the boss over let's put it this way, you lead the office of the Wisconsin State Public Defenders. First, what is the overall mission? What's the overall goal? I think I cited some of it in my little introduction, but talk about that role.
Yeah, no, you did a great job. I am honored to be the state public defender and to lead our office in Wisconsin. The assistant state public defenders that work in our offices all across the state, and there are 40 of them, do a wonderful job representing clients. We represent clients who qualify for our services financially. There is the need to provide that information to determine if we can actually assign a lawyer to represent you throughout your entire case. We are also partnered with private bar lawyers who agree to be trained and to, you know, kind of have the same dedication and commitment that our staff lawyers have. They really do partner with us to also be assigned cases and represent clients, and they do that very, very well. Between the two groups of lawyers, we again cover all 72 counties across the state with our 40 offices. We have a trial division, which is where many of our clients start their litigation, and sometimes cases are appealed and they go to our appellate division. We have offices in Milwaukee and Madison that provide appellate representation. And this is an important constitutional requirement. I want to make sure to get that in, because we're celebrating the birthday, if you will, of Gideon v. Wainwright, 63 years old this week. It's the United States Supreme Court decision that made the representation by public defenders for anyone who cannot afford to hire counsel on their own a requirement, an absolute mandate. And Wisconsin's response has been to create legislatively the Office of the State Public Defender.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And, you know, this whole Miranda warning, you have the right to an attorney. If you can't afford one, one will be provided. That's in our Bill of Rights.
So the Miranda warning is a prophylactic that helps with, it's a different case, by the way, yeah. Miranda v. Arizona, yeah. But also comes from the United States Supreme Court and is an assistance to individuals who have been arrested or encountering in certain instances law enforcement. It protects anything that they might say, and in some situations do, when they encounter law enforcement. And yes, it also speaks of the right to have a lawyer with you if you are facing being questioned by law enforcement, or law enforcement should stop the questioning.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there are, it looked to me like you have about three different areas. And I think it'd be interesting to, you know, from those who are listening, to know a little more detail about them. One of them is criminal and delinquency cases. And maybe you could give us some examples of what those might entail.
Well, we handle any kind of case situation or client situation where an individual is facing the loss of liberty. The most serious case type is a felony case. That's a case where the mandatory sentence could be spending some time in prison. We also provide representation on misdemeanor cases where, among other things, the mandatory sentence could be a jail sentence. We also, as you mentioned, provide representation to young people who are accused of committing either a felony or a misdemeanor under the age of 17. But in termination of parental rights cases, for example, where we provide representation, no one is going to be locked up, but the courts have determined that that's a very, very serious type of legal action against parents. And because it's so serious, it's referred to as the death penalty in parental rights representation. And so we provide representation in this state. We also provide representation on mental health cases, sometimes in probate court, Chapter 51 and Chapter 55 matters, and of course, revocation of status offenses, probation, parole, extended supervision, where people may be released in the community, but because of some concern or issue by the Department of Corrections, that status is in jeopardy and being challenged, and they're being returned to custody of some type, prison or jail, and we provide representation there. So we provide representation in a lot of varied matters that are laid out in the statutes.
Yeah, I was one that came to mind to me was people facing court orders that would allow medical professionals, for example, to forcibly administer mental health medications. I mean, that's a pretty tricky thing. It's something that you folks I know work with.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Andy in Appleton has something for us. Let's go there. Andy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I've been listening for a long time, and it's an honor to be able to speak with you today. So my experience with the Public Defender's Office in Allegheny County here in Appleton, Wisconsin, has really been an amazing experience. So I was in active addiction for many years, and through that, I had multiple felony charges, and had it not been for the public defender that represented me, I would probably be rotting away in a prison cell somewhere. Instead, today I celebrate almost 2 years of recovery, and I'm in a diversion program that we call treatment court here in Allegheny County. And on the streets, people hear a lot of things about public defenders, but I just want to say my experience has been an amazing experience, and I'm super grateful for resources that the state has to offer.
Andy, thank you so much. Well, Jennifer, I'm sure you've got a comment.
No, that is an excellent testimonial. I appreciate the fact that you called in, and I am very, very grateful to the skilled individuals in Allegheny County that provided representation to you. I also heard you mention treatment court, and that is another aspect of the services that we provide through the State Public Defender Office. In all of the counties that provide a treatment court as an alternative, our public defenders are sitting right there with the rest of the team, which consists of judges, prosecutors, Department of Corrections, law enforcement, as well as community partners that provide alternatives and provide help with the sanctions that need to be administered in those courts to help the individuals participating be successful. Yeah. I'm happy that that program was available for you in Outagamie County, and I wish you continued success going forward.
Yeah, is that something that's a treatment court? It has a different sound to it to me, and you were kind of describing how it works. I mean, is that service available throughout Wisconsin?
It's available in many counties throughout Wisconsin. Almost every county provides a treatment court of some type. The treatment courts are designed to work in a slightly different way from our adversarial courts. They are not adversarial, and it's not a court where one goes to protest their innocence, but rather to seek help and get treatment through court-ordered supervision of and oversight of that process. The individuals work very, very hard to deal with addiction, and it is extremely important that they learn and master the tools to deal with their addiction, because it's brought them into the criminal courts, right? The most important aspect, though, I think, is that many of our counties provide the service and that we have many success stories. I'll just put in a plug here for the Wisconsin Association of Treatment Court Professionals. They will hold their annual conference at the end of April. And folks from all over the state who are providing those treatment court services will come together to be updated on approaches that are being used and that are successful across the United States.
That's really a wonderful service, and one that I think a lot of people, you hope that a lot of people get involved in. Are there a lot of people that go through that treatment service? I mean, citizens who are in those kinds of circumstances?
I think there are a good number is how I would respond to that. But we need more resources in order to permit more individuals to go through that kind of program. You know, our prisons are very crowded. Our jails are very crowded. And if we could have more resources for services like treatment court and to permit judges to spend the time, prosecutors and public defenders, as well as Department of Corrections staff, to really spend the time working on treatment court versus the adversarial process, I think we would see not only a reduction, but our money, our tax money, yeah, well spent.
Yeah. Dwayne in Westfield has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Dwayne.
Hey, how you doing? Love the show. Longtime caller. I'm going to miss you when you leave.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Oh, I'm going to definitely miss you when we're going to leave. But anyway, I have done time in prison. And prior to that, when I got out, my probation decided that sometimes they don't really like to try to help. So I had a probation or I had a public defender, and he did more for me than actually what my paid attorney did for getting me the amount of time that I did. I probably would have gotten a lot. I mean, because we originally had a deal and that fell apart. But the one that was the public defender, he had people, actually trying to find out the information, what was real and what was not. And I trust them more than I do a paid attorney. And I think the public defender's office needs to have a little bit more, I could say, money to go so they can bring more people that are qualified to actually do the right thing, so our prisons will not be so fooled up with stuff that they don't need.
Oh, Dwayne, thanks a lot for calling. Comments, Jennifer?
You know, first of all, Dwayne, thank you for calling in and sharing your experience. I totally agree with you regarding the amount of resources that the public defender's office needs. You mentioned support staff and basically individuals who worked with the public defender attorney to ferret out resources that could help your case. We have those kinds of resources, and they assist. They're great staff, but we need more of them. We have, you know, investigators, we have clerical staff, we have social workers and paralegals. But up in the area where you reside, Duane, you know, we have one paralegal that serves 30 lawyers in that part of the state. We recently, as recently as Tuesday, really lost the ability to move forward in asking through legislation for additional support staff resources and additional attorney positions in our agency. We did not receive the positions that we had asked for in the last budget that was announced in June of 2025. And Representative Stephan did a great job of working with all of the criminal legal system individuals to introduce what was called the Justice for All Act, a bill in the legislature that would have given us our biggest staff increase in positions in almost 20 plus years. Again, that effort was not successful because the vote did not happen in the Senate. It didn't get scheduled for a vote in its final floor period. But we are hopeful that in the next budget, we can make a request that will be supported, that will be granted. The other thing that our support staff do is they just make sure that lawyers are in the courtrooms because they take care of all of the work for clients that needs to be done outside of the courtroom. You know, they're the individuals who make sure that eligibility is determined. They make sure that witnesses are looked up. They make the calls to determine if we can get someone released on bond and what those conditions might be. Our support staff find housing and treatment facilities, and they attend court hearings at times in other courtrooms when other types of matters are pending, oftentimes in civil court, for example, to make sure that everything is working out to the best for our clients. So we really, really need support staff. And, you know, I've felt like I've been begging for them since I took over this role, but they are such a necessary component of providing good quality, but also cost-effective representation in every single type of case.
Jennifer Bias, our guest, the state public defender leading the Office of Wisconsin State Public Defenders. Questions or comments for her, or maybe an experience to share. We've had some great calls so far, and looking forward to hearing from you. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking about our public defender program in Wisconsin with Jennifer Bias, who's the boss, the state public defender. She leads the Office of Wisconsin State Public Defenders, of course, an attorney herself, with a lot of experience, and it's great to have her along. Questions, comments, or maybe an experience, I hope you'll join in. Again, the number 800-642-1234, or email to talk@WPR.org. Let's take a call from Karen in Oshkosh. Karen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I was a prosecutor for 5 years in La Crosse County and for 30 years in Hennepin County, which is Minneapolis. And I have experience in violent crime and things like child support enforcement and also with drug court. And so I'm calling to endorse the significance of a robust public defender staff, because the police get one version of the offense that occurs, whoever reports first. When somebody has public defense or other defense representation, that assists in seeking out additional investigation that may prove to be exculpatory, mm-hmm. as in helping the person's case. The other thing is the public defenders and other defense attorneys get to know the client and can provide lots of valuable information to help the person who faces criminal penalties that can include probation with conditions like get drug treatment. So that's my experience. Very important to have a robust public defense staff.
Karen, thank you very much for calling. Jennifer, comment.
I absolutely agree with Karen and certainly appreciate her support both in the state of Wisconsin and in Minnesota and speaking to the need for resources on the side of the public defender. We've been challenged, I think, in the upper Midwest and in a lot of places across the United States in finding lawyers who are committed to working in this area. There have been some challenges as well for prosecutor staff. We have suffered both in finding lawyers to be on staff in our law firm, as well as private bar lawyers. And this issue intensified greatly following the pandemic. Many folks retired, many folks decided, hey, I just don't want to do this type of work. Unfortunately, I believe many students decided this was not the course that they wanted to pursue following law school. And so we've been hurting in that regard. But we do need the state legislature, which in Wisconsin provides resources to state agencies. And even though we're a law firm, we're also a state agency. We need them to take a look at this issue very carefully, very insightfully, and recognize what the needs are. It's important for a number of reasons to hear both sides of the story, right? To get that information out in court, to litigate, to bring forward legal issues and file motions and go to trial, present who the individual is at sentencing if the case gets that far, because not everyone is the person they're made out to be in those allegations. And it's the defense attorney's job to present the story of their client. And so we need to be able to do that so that the court, who ultimately will make the decision, hears both sides of the story and is making a decision regarding sentence and structuring that sentence appropriately. We have law in Wisconsin that instructs the judge to do exactly that. And our judges, I believe, are very good at doing that, but they have to have the information that comes from the defense bar, that comes from the defense attorney in the room on behalf of the client. So I really appreciate Karen's comments.
Thank you, Karen. And thanks for that great response as well. I appreciate that, Jennifer. Karen, thanks again. Dave and Toma, what's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to ask about why prosecutors can drag out a case so long before they ever get to try it, possibly destroying innocent people's lives in the process because they lose their ability to do anything, to hold a job or anything while they're waiting for the prosecution to do their job.
Hmm. Interesting, Dave. Thank you for calling. Jennifer, comment on the length of time it takes sometimes.
Yeah, thank you, Dave, for your observation. Our court systems, especially right now, are pretty backlogged, pretty backed up. Sometimes, in addition to prosecutors who may need to have adjournments to find witnesses, make sure that they're served and on their way to court when needed. Sometimes there's perhaps not a lawyer that's been appointed and those kinds of things can happen. It is certainly also challenging when individuals are kept in custody because of high cash bond that they have to post or other conditions that they cannot meet while their charges are pending. Many people who are kept in custody, as you said, aren't able to get on with their lives, but in very, very significant ways, lose you know, their employment, they lose their home, they lose their family, some even lose the custody of their children. And those are the other issues that as public defenders, when we're talking about bond and release on conditions, we have in the back of our minds for each and every one of our clients. We're advocating that there be the presumption of innocence that rules in every single situation, first and foremost. Presume this person is simply an accused individual and the truth of the matter will come out later through the court proceedings. But for right now, our Constitution requires us really to release individuals back into the community and do so safely, of course, but to release them so that they can maintain their citizenship, maintain their responsibilities, maintain their obligations to and control their livelihood, because it's much tougher. You know, even a 3-week stay in jail, a 3-month stay in jail, we're talking about it being just greatly, greatly exacerbated. You know, we do have trial, speedy trials in statute in the state of Wisconsin for both misdemeanor and felony cases that set out a way for those matters that are pending to get to trial. First of all, you need a lawyer assigned to your case to review and be prepared with witnesses to present your defense, whatever that might be in preparation for trial. But we absolutely need to look at our speedy trial, you know, laws and certainly release individuals from custody, if not just outright dismiss cases when the state is not ready and is not going to proceed in a number of different types of cases. We do have a backlog, and some of that is because cases are asked to be adjourned and they're rescheduled over and over and over again. It would be great if the state would also take into consideration exactly what Dave has mentioned in determining the needed resources for the public defender's office.
Yeah, I think last August, I think the Wisconsin court system reported a backlog of something like 1,200 or 12,000 thereabouts felony cases that were in backlog. And you think about the lives of everybody. I mean, if you lose, 3 weeks even, you know, you can lose your job. You're no income. You can't make your rent payment. There's all kinds of things that occur, which may or may not be your fault at all.
Absolutely. You know, in terms of the backlog that you mentioned, Larry, it is difficult to tally exactly the cost. But I will add this. There is significant cost to having individuals sitting in jail for these endless amounts of time who could be released. County taxpayers pay that cost. You know, the other thing is, again, individuals have not been determined to be guilty of anything at that point. And so it's a fairness issue. And, you know, the fact that our jails are crowded, our jails are overcrowded. There are other issues that surface when there's jail crowding because of these situations where bail has not been provided at a level where an individual could be released. But the other costs that I mentioned also weigh on county taxpayers because citizens are taking care of children that are parents are in jail. What about those housing costs? And of course, we know that in this state, employers are looking every day for people to take positions. If we were, you know, able to let some of these folks out of custody, I'm sure that they would be able to get gainful employment once again.
John in Spooner has something. John, go ahead. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry and Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I was arrested on charges back in 2014, but so I ended up I have difficulty expressing myself, so bear with me. But I ended up having four different public defenders. I spent 250 some days in jail. I never got one single word with a public defender. So whenever there was a court appearance, which was like, I don't know, once every couple, 2 or 3 months, the public defender never even acknowledged that I was brought into the courtroom. Instead spent his time talking with the prosecutor and the district attorney about his retirement plans and the attorney expressing how he was underpaid and it was unfair. He shouldn't even have to represent people for the low wages he was receiving in payment. And I ended up pleading guilty to felony charges, what are going to affect me the rest of my life. I can't get housing or anything. But the Court of Appeals took my case, and I was in conversation with a judge trying to explain the situation that and so I went to the law library every day I could get into the county jail, which is limited access. They don't really want. And I was having to manually copy down all the statutes that were applying in my case as far as telling me my case doesn't exist, disappearing paperwork. And, you know, if I'd have had a public defender that I could have actually sat down and talked with for at least 5 minutes, it would have been a whole different outcome.
So, different kind of story here, Jennifer. Comment.
Yeah, thanks for your call, John. And I want to express apologies for your experience with our staff and with our law firm. You know, we strive very, very conscientiously to prepare clients for the representation to appear in front of the judge, to understand the charges that are against them and what they're facing. We strive to provide client-centered representation where the client directs the goals of the representation, whether there's going to be a resolution or a trial or whatever. And our lawyers, you know, are certainly well-trained lawyers and well-trained litigators, and they're looking through the law books and reflecting on the training and experience they have with regard to how to approach any kind of charge, including the felony charge that you talked about in your situation. I don't know details of your case, certainly, and I don't know why there were four different attorneys or ultimately why you ended up pleading guilty or no contest to a felony, but certainly your case is in the appeals court and hopefully there will be a positive resolution for you there. You know, it is very, very challenging up in northwestern Wisconsin to keep our offices staffed. And I do have to say that Spooner in particular is an office where we've suffered some tragedy. We had a staff attorney who frankly passed away shortly after a court appearance one day, a very experienced lawyer who had worked with clients for decades. It has been difficult to keep staff in the Bayfield and Ashland area, and those lawyers serve a number of different counties in the area. It is a reason why, again, we are and have been asking for additional resources so that we have support professionals that can keep up with clients, keep up with their issues, and assist the lawyer who is appearing in court to provide the representation that's needed in a particular case, in a particular situation.
John, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I'm wondering, in order to qualify, and I don't think we've covered this, I wanted to get it in. I mean, if somebody's listening and wants to know, well, am I going to need a public defender how do I get one and that sort of thing?
Well, the first step is to determine if you're facing a loss of liberty in our courts in those case types that I mentioned at the beginning, felonies, misdemeanors, or if you're a young person that's facing a felony or a misdemeanor in youth court. Mental health matters, a Chapter 51 proceeding or a Chapter 55, termination of parental rights, a revocation of probation or parole or extended supervision, any of those case types qualify you to seek a public defender. But the second biggest piece is financial qualification. You do have to qualify for a public defender. And what's unfortunate is that we are still determining financial eligibility according to 2009 financial standards. It's 2026, and our income standards have not been adjusted since 2009. So I have to admit, we are leaving a lot of people out. And when we leave people out from being represented by a state public defender attorney, the county picks up that appointment and picks up that cost. So we will be seeking resources to have basically the eligibility standard changed. Hopefully it will be fixed so that going forward, we will not have to have such a lengthy gap before the legislature takes a look at it. It is important that every person, again, as we celebrate the birthday of Gideon V. Wainwright this week, that everyone who needs representation, poor people who need representation, people who don't have the resources to be able to hire their own lawyer of their choosing, is able to come to the state public defender for representation.
Well, Jennifer, you're an eloquent defender of a state, the Office of Wisconsin State Public Defenders. I hope we can talk about this again. We've had some interesting calls, and it'd be great to have you back some point and talk again. Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Jennifer Bias is the state public defender leading the Office of Wisconsin State Public Defenders. Interesting show. We're going to be staying in the legal side of things as we talk about the legal work of the Legal Action of Wisconsin. We'll talk about civil suits and so forth with them. That coming up next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. You know, at some point, you may need some legal help to get maybe an employer to pay for the overtime you worked, or maybe get your security deposit back, or maybe convince court officials to expunge a criminal conviction. Those are some of the things that, well, obviously very difficult problems, but they can be resolved through Legal Action of Wisconsin. It's the state's largest civil legal aid firm. And we have a couple of guests for us today. Larry Dupuy is the Chief Advocacy and Legal Officer. Larry, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining in.
Thank you for having us.
Rachel Fox Armstrong, our other guest, is the Chief External Relations Officer. And Rachel, great to have you coming in as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
As we talk with our two guests, I hope you'll join in. Later on, we'll talk about jury duty. That's at 12:30. But for right now, we are looking at things like eviction notices, maybe needing some help resolving a tax dispute, possibly with the IRS. Maybe you've had experiences to share with us about Legal Action of Wisconsin through the work that you've done with those folks. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk at WPR.org. That's talk at WPR.org. LegalActionOfWisconsin.org. Rachel, Legal Action of Wisconsin is one of the state's largest, I think, nonprofit law firms providing civil legal services, and you do it free of charge. How big is the firm?
Yes. So our firm is about 140 staff members strong. We have roughly 90 staff attorneys as part of that staff. And then we do have a really robust volunteer network, over 400 volunteer attorneys, students, paralegals, and other legal professionals that help us take about 13,000 cases every year.
13,000. That's a lot of cases. What's the do you have a relationship with the Office of Wisconsin State Public Defenders? I was going to ask that because we just talked to Rachel. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's an interesting question because I think it's often a misunderstanding from civil legal aid and what that is.
Yeah.
We hear, you know, the Miranda rights, you know, you have a right to an attorney. If you can't afford one, one will be appointed to you. And that would be the State Public Defender's Office. But in civil and administrative cases, you don't have that same right to an attorney. And if you can't afford one, you do not have access to one unless you can get access through organizations like ours. And there is a really high need for those services.
Yeah, I would think so. Larry, your firm helps clients get criminal records corrected or maybe expunged. You help with arrest warrants, people who have arrest warrants because of perhaps unpaid court debts. Why do you take cases like these?
Well, I think the basic thing is, like, although there is a right to counsel in criminal cases, and obviously having your liberty taken away in a criminal case is an extremely serious, life-altering thing. Frankly, a lot of what we are helping people with is also life-altering. So in addition to the things that you mentioned where, you know, you're talking about somebody who has a criminal background that has got errors in it. We had one big case we did a few years back called Teague versus Schimmel involved, you know, people who had criminal records that were they really didn't have a criminal record, but somebody had used their name, given the police their name when they were arrested. And it took a lawsuit and going all the way to the Supreme Court to get that taken out. So that's really important. And expungement is very important. But we also deal with very immediate kinds of life altering situations, like people being evicted. The landlord might lock them out, not even give them the civil process that they're supposed to get. Or somebody might be facing imminent harm from either a domestic partner who is abusing them, or they might be a victim of trafficking. And all of those things can be extremely serious and have very, very life-altering consequences for people, can even be life and death in some circumstances. I mean, being homeless during that last cold stretch could have been really, really harmful for people, especially if they have other health problems. So, you know, these are very serious things, but unfortunately, there isn't, at this point at least, a right to counsel in those cases. And so, you know, organizations like ours are, you know, there to do the work. We get money from a variety of sources. Rachel's in a better position to talk about that than I am. But really what we're trying to do is provide that safety net that when somebody is either caught up in the legal system, the civil legal system, or they need something from the legal system, like a restraining order against an abuser, or they need an order that the landlord has to let them back in to get their things after locking them out. Those are extremely important things. And, you know, there are people among us who think that there really should be an equivalent to Gideon versus Wainwright. I heard Jennifer Bias mention that. There should be a civil version of the Gideon rule for at least some of these categories where of cases where the effects can be so profound.
Yeah. And Rachel, you do get your sources. Somebody would say, well, where does the money come from? It's got to come from somewhere.
Yes. And we do get a lot of support through grants. About 60% of our funding is derived from federal sources, either directly or runs through our kind of local municipalities and through to us, but then also other grants, foundation support, individual giving. While I did mention that we take 13,000 cases a year, I will also say that over 500,000 people in the state of Wisconsin qualify for our services every year. So we do have to turn away about 70% of the people who even make it through our phone system to call us to ask for help. So, you know, we are the largest nonprofit law firm, as you said at the top, but the need is just enormous. So we have a tremendous amount of support, but we're always seeking more support, donors, corporations, foundations, you know, the state, a lot of states surrounding us fund civil legal aid, some in the millions. Wisconsin has not funded civil legal aid as a direct line item for quite some time. So we are always seeking more support because the need is really vast.
Mark in Sheboygan has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Mark.
Hi, I'm going to turn my speaker back off. Maybe I can hear you guys can hear me a little better. I'm calling about a pardon that I did for my son or tried to apply for through the governor. Like so 4 years ago, I think I still have his decision. My son is now, he was born in 79, so I think he's like 47 years old right now. He was convicted of a felony when he was a juvenile. They tried him as an adult. And this has been hanging over his head. And when we did the pardon, the governor said no. The answer was no. So, I mean, we had no help. My son, when he was convicted of this crime, he was actually only 15 years old. This turning 16, he was part of a gang-related crime. So they charged him as a felony because it was a group of kids. So then they waited a little longer till he turned, I think, almost 17, and then they tried him for an adult, and the prosecutor, or not the prosecutor, but the public defender was Fred Wilk, the attorney in Sheboygan at the time, ready to retire. He did absolutely nothing for my son.
Well, you know, I don't know that we can litigate the case, but now what should be the approach for Mark here moving forward?
Yeah, well, so again, I can't give legal advice over a radio show.
Of
obviously,
course.
You wouldn't want to get, you know, we don't want to get into the nuts and bolts of the specific case. Legal action, we've not always had this, but for a number of a relatively short number of years, we have had a program as part of our employability work to provide either, you know, efforts to expunge cases, which is a very narrow band of cases where expungement is allowed in Wisconsin. It is for juveniles, but it's only for you know, certain relatively minor felonies, and the judge has to say at the beginning that you can have your conviction expunged after you've completed your sentence. Pardon is it's something that the state constitution vests discretionary authority in the governor, and governors before Tony Evers, the two governors prior to that, did not issue, I don't believe, any pardons. If they did, they were very, very few and rare. Governor Evers, I don't know how long it took to get started, but he set up sort of a system of providing pardons under some circumstances and takes applications for them and that kind of thing. He has a sort of strict list of criteria that he's looking for, sort of.
Yeah.
And one of those is that you have to have completed the prison part of your sentence at a minimum.
We can talk some more about that. We're going to take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back and with Larry Dupuy and Rachel Fox Armstrong to answer more questions about what's going on in the responsibilities of legal action of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Back right at the news. Thank you. Great to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at the work of Legal Action of Wisconsin, who does a lot of work in the state, providing free help for those who have, under a wide variety of civil court situations, they're covering it. We'll get a little more detail on that as we go along here. But I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts as we move along. And the number is 800-642-1234 or email to talk at WPR.org. Just when we broke for news, Mark had called us about working to try and get a conviction expunged from for his son, who under a variety of circumstances he explained it briefly. What would be just a next step for him? Would Legal Action of Wisconsin be a place for him to at least seek more information or get more help?
Yeah, that is a possibility. You know, our phone number is 855-947-2529, and the caller could certainly contact Legal Action and see if we can give advice on that. As I said, there, you know, sort of criteria that the governor, who has a lot of discretion in this area, has. So, you know, they may at least be able to go through those criteria, give the person a sense of whether they might qualify under those criteria, and then help, you know, if so, help put together as compelling a package as possible to get the governor's the board of people who review these things for the governor, and then the governor to agree to that. So it's definitely worth checking. I can't, you know, guarantee that we'd be able to represent.
Sure.
And then income and that kind of thing, whether the person qualifies.
It's 855, and the number is 855-4. I lost it already.
I can tell you it's
947-2529.
947-2529.
You can also apply online as well at legalaction.org.
Yeah, legalaction.org might be the easy way to do it. We can post those up on our page today at talk at WPR.org/Larry. We post the show about 2 hours after the show's over, and we can certainly add the numbers and the website for folks who didn't get that written down. Kim in Eau Claire has a question. Kim, thank you for calling.
Hello. Yeah, I don't know if this has been talked about. So I, as a public person, had to pay a tariff last year on an import from India. And I know the judges have determined that tariffs weren't legal. Is there any recourse, or do you guys know of if I could get my money back?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I was going to ask, does that fall under your purview there, Larry?
No, this is not something that we have been involved in. It is a civil matter, but it's not something that Legal Action has been involved in directly at this point. And I'm not, you know, I mean, maybe arguably under our consumer work we could, but typically what we're doing in those cases is helping people who have low, very, or moderate income deal with debt collectors who are coming after them inappropriately. And those are sort of the major kinds of cases we handle there. Occasionally, you know, tax-related things. And one of the things the Supreme Court decided in that case was that this is a tax, and only Congress can authorize a tax. But I think that's something that, you know, what I would do is go and look at the U.S. Supreme Court decision and see who the lawyers in those cases were, and maybe try to reach out to some of them. That's not something that we have a lot of expertise in.
Kim, thank you for calling. Brad in Madison, your turn. Hi, Brad.
Yeah, great program, Larry. Hope you get done in time to watch the Badgers. So, because they're lost without you, Larry. But But question on my two children have autism, and I recently learned that the state of Wisconsin funds private schools with special needs kids at almost 100%, but public schools at only 35%. Do you do class action lawsuits? This seems to violate the Equal Protection Clause, the Constitution, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and a whole bunch of other federal laws and probably state laws as well. But
yeah,
do those kind of lawsuits representing children's with young people with special needs. So.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling, Brett.
Yeah, that's a great question. Unfortunately, we do not take class action lawsuits. We have a number of federal funders, and there are specific things that they look for our work. And some of those involve things that we aren't able to do because of the funding that we receive. And one of those is class action. So I'm sorry that we don't have an answer for you on that question. It's not in the purview of the work that we do. But do you have anything you want to add, Larry?
Yeah, one thing I might suggest is there is another civil legal aid firm out there called Disability Rights Wisconsin, and they may be a good source to get some information. If they can't represent you, they might be able to steer you to other attorneys who are involved in disability rights, especially in the school systems. That's a very common area of work that Disability Rights Wisconsin does, and we partner with them on a number of things, but one of the things we don't partner with them on is class actions because of the restrictions on from some of our funders.
There you go, Brett. Thank you very much for calling. By the way, you could join in too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. You know, I was thinking about this, and I'm sure that there are many people who say, "Well, I got a civil suit here. I can be my own attorney for that," even though I'm not one. Rachel, probably not the best idea.
Right. Yeah, we find, you know, the legal system is really developed by attorneys to be navigated with attorneys. It's really hard to navigate on your own. And especially when we think about the particular cases we work in, you're under an incredible amount of stress and urgency. You might be at risk of losing your home. You might be in a threat of violence. You might be losing your public benefits. You know, you have some sort of error on your application and all of a sudden you can't put food on the table and you're not sure how to appeal. And you're trying to make it to the jobs that you're working and, you know, navigate the system, find trustworthy information online. You know, it's a lot to try to navigate the system on your own in the best of times. And when you're facing some of these life-altering problems, the stress that you're under, what's at stake, it makes it even harder to navigate on your own. And I think any one of us, if we were faced with a legal problem, we'd want to feel that we have the knowledge and the help and the resources to access this legal system that is supposed to be here for all of us to find legal resolution and find fair resolutions. And unfortunately, without legal help, it's less likely you'll be able to do so.
Yeah, there's research that actually indicates that having a lawyer makes a huge difference in outcomes in these kinds of cases. And civil legal aid is essential to making sure that, you know, that the issues are presented to the court. You know, a lot of times people don't know how to present their case. They don't know what's relevant or what's not relevant. It's very hard for a court to sort of sort that out without the help of a lawyer. And we actually see this in practice in because we're often in a courtroom over and over again, and we're waiting for our case to be called. We see somebody else's case happen and somebody else doesn't have a lawyer. And I mean, we can't step in and suddenly say, "Hey, we'll be your lawyer right now." and we see what happens. I mean, and if they had been able to come to us, maybe we would have been able to advise them on how to present their case, or if we couldn't present it for them. And we sometimes see that happen, and somebody will come to us afterwards, and you know, it's usually too late. But sometimes we've actually managed to appeal for those people, and been successful on appeal, and had the case sent back, and you know, hope the court official learned something from that process,
yeah.
and won't do that to a pro se litigant in the future. But it's real.
Yeah, we find even that the judges are happy to see us in the courtroom because they know that the process is going to happen more smoothly. They feel like they're going to have a better understanding of the case in order to make their judgment. It helps it move along more quickly. One of our state funders actually did a study on the return on investment for civil legal aid and found that for every dollar spent on civil legal aid in Wisconsin, $8.40 is returned to the economy. And part of that is things like court efficiency. Some of that is also, you know, when you can prevent someone being turned out of their home, you know, without ability to even take their belongings, things like that, then you find a family who is spiraled further into poverty. They start over, they don't have furniture, you know, they might be in the shelter system, emergency services needing to be called, they might lose their job, you know, so you see the spiral of some of these problems that can really cause a drain on the other social services and the economy in Wisconsin. So civil legal aid is really a smart investment for donors, for the state, for funders.
So if and I'm not sure that we've covered this. I'm trying to remember. If not, it's worth repeating because I can't remember it. What are the qualifications? You know, if somebody's listening in today saying, well, I wonder if I qualify to be asking for the services of legal action of Wisconsin, what are the criteria?
For eligibility, one of our main criteria is income. And so we typically assist folks who are 125% of the poverty line or below. There's some exceptions to that, but that's typically who we serve. And for listeners who don't know, you know, what that looks like for a family of four is around $40,000 a year. So we're talking about people who are really struggling to make ends meet. But we do have on our website, legalaction.org, kind of our list of eligibility requirements, and our intake staff are available to help talk through that because some of our areas of law have, you know, different requirements for assistance.
You might be hearing sirens and thinking the police have come to arrest me, but that is not the case. We, if you're hearing the sound, it means that there is probably a practice fire siren going off. That means that everybody except for me and my technical director will be staying here, and hopefully it won't last forever. And I don't know. I'm sure you're hearing it. Are you here? Yeah, you're hearing it as well. So let's get through this anyway, and assume that there is not a fire, but it's a practice for a fire, and we'll keep going. This has happened to me. I've been doing this show a long, long time in this building, I think since 1978 in this building or something like that. And it happens once or twice a year on the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus that buildings go through this. So
well, your voice is louder than the siren, so we can hear you.
That is very, very good to know. Well, Larry, people charge, you know, they're not automatically get, if they're charged with a crime, they're not, and can't afford an attorney, they're not automatically going to get legal representation, are they?
Well, yeah, on the criminal side, I think when you were talking with Jennifer Bias, she indicated that they have an income cap that's actually quite low. So even in the criminal realm, yeah, it's very true that just because you are charged with a crime, you don't immediately get a right to counsel. You have to be below a certain sort of indigency level to get SPD help. And sometimes if a court thinks that the person really needs a lawyer, for their criminal case, even if they don't qualify for the public defender, the circuit court can appoint a lawyer at county expense. But yeah, it is sort of the idea is you shouldn't face possible imprisonment without the assistance of a lawyer, and the courts try to do their best to make sure that if somebody can't pay for the lawyer themselves, that they would have access to a lawyer, either through the SPD or otherwise. But yeah, if you make a certain amount of money, they're going to say no at first, at least, and then, you know.
And there you go. Here we are just about tax time. And I know that you provide help resolving tax issues. And I'm just now being told that we're going to have to ring off.
Oh, my goodness.
It's the first time I've ever had to do this on a show. I've always kept going right through the show. And so maybe there is a fire in the building. I don't have no idea. But we'll find out.
I hope everything's okay. Thank you for having us.
I'm very sorry. And listen, will you come back?
Of course.
Let's do this on a day when there's not the sirens going off in the building and everybody is supposed to leave. Thank you both.
We want you to be safe. So,
you know, I'm an old guy, been around a long time. I can take care of myself. Rachel, Larry, thank you so much.
We will get you
back and we'll do this properly, okay?
Thank you. Good luck.
Larry Dupuy is the Chief Advocacy and Legal Officer for Legal Aid of Wisconsin. Rachel Fox Armstrong, the Chief External Relations Officer of Legal Action of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mehler for WPR News.